This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. You may have seen billboards around town showing a pregnant woman and the words, "Everything you take, baby takes too." It's part of a campaign involving several organizations in the area to raise awareness about the effects of drugs, including some prescription medication, on babies in the womb. Dr. Robin Perucci is a neonatologist at Bronson Methodist Hospital. Diane Schaefer is Program Manager of Services for Youth and Families at Kalamazoo Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
So what medications, what things beyond narcotics, for instance, can cause complications for a newborn baby?
Well, things that you're basically taking for pain relief. And we're not talking about Tylenol or Motrin. So, you know, that's kind of the baseline. That's okay. But once we get into things like Vicodin, Percocet, Tylenol with codeine, all of those meds contain something called an opiate, which is the same drug class as heroin, which kind of comes as a shocking surprise to many, going, I'm not taking heroin. But the problem is the ramifications of it are exactly the same, in that you can become addicted. And if you're pregnant, then we don't call it addiction in the baby, but the baby can certainly go through withdrawal when the drugs are no longer around.
And this is what we're referring to as neonatal abstinence syndrome, correct?
Yes, that's specifically the syndrome of withdrawal from opiates, from these drugs. Lots of folks take a lot of other stuff, but this syndrome has been specifically detailed for opiate withdrawal.
And is this flying under the radar a little bit compared to things like narcotics and alcohol and smoking? I mean, people, I think, generally know that those things are not good for a baby in the womb and that a pregnant woman shouldn't be taking them. But are these sort of things, is this a little bit different, and is there a little less awareness about that?
I think there's a lot less awareness. What we've seen, well, we've seen two things. First of all, since around 2000, there has been a huge increase in just the number of prescription drugs being written for. And of course, then the ripple effect is it's getting into more pregnant women because the entire population is taking more. To kind of give you an idea, the United States now consumes 80% of the entire world's opiate supply. It's just shocking. So with that increase, there is real problems that come with this. And the other thing is, people think of, oh, drug addicted, that's from a street dealer, that's often someone of lower social economic status. Blah. And the truth is, this is coming from our medicine cabinets, and it doesn't know anything about your skin color or how much you earn for a living. This cuts across everybody. And the predominance of people that we're seeing now, it's when you look at, and this is from national websites that say, how many are addicted and what are you doing? It's not a tiny, tiny part of that pie is from a street dealer. It starts really from the medicine cabinet.
Do we have firm numbers or at least a good ballpark on numbers in terms of how big the problem is, how many babies this is affecting?
We're now heading into thousands of them. I guess to bring it home to just our community, in our NICU, so this is one place where babies get taken care of, as opposed to the multiple other hospitals and other community, we went from, a handful of kids a year that we would see in withdrawal. We're talking like seven. We're now in the 50s. I mean, it's logarithmically increased, and which is kind of what brought our attention up before we even knew it was a national problem. I was actually kind of relieved to see that everyone was seeing this and not just our community. When we went, what is going on? We're seeing, it's rare now if in the nursery we don't have a baby withdrawing. It's just craziness.
In addition to addiction, I'm wondering if there are also women who could be taking some sort of a painkiller, legally prescribed, and perhaps not know they're pregnant yet. And is there some good science yet on how much someone could, you know, damage the baby early? Is it a limited amount that you know, is a very small amount that could do it? Do we know any of that yet, I guess?
We really don't. This is still so early because we've just really seen this kind of epidemic happen. The neuroscience of the fetus, and it's so complex, we don't know. I can't tell you a dose that's related to, oh, if you take this amount, the baby will have this problem. And it not only because the embryology, the development of the brain, it goes through so many different phases. So it also depends when in your pregnancy you're taking, in addition to what kind of med and what the dose is. But then it's pretty rare that someone is only taking one drug. Alcohol, smoking, those things have their own complicating factors. And in a developing brain, this is just ridiculously complex as to what happens when. We just don't know a lot of what the dose and side effect yet. It's too early in the investigation.
I think
Go ahead, Diane.
The other part of that too is on most medications or alcohol or tobacco, when you become pregnant, you're told you should just stop doing it. And when you're talking about opioids and opiates, you actually run more risk if you stop taking it while pregnant because the fetus could go into seizures or other issues. And so then you have to figure out what's the best outcome for both mom and baby. How do you regulate and take care of both throughout the pregnancy? Yet you know that they have to continue on this substance that isn't good for the baby.
Is it then like a gradual withdrawal, sort of a scaling back as you go?
Well, this is actually because of the mom's physiology when you're pregnant. They have what's called an increased volume of distribution. Literally, their blood supply increases. And what they need to just maintain themselves and have the mom not go through withdrawal increases, which is where one of the wonderful things about what's happened is there's a new partnership with the methadone clinic in town, Victory Clinic, and talking just with the other substance abuse counselors who try to actually, it's almost counterintuitive, tell the moms, okay, stopping cold turkey, first of all, the rate that you're going to return goes up, and then you're going to find something that's really inappropriate to turn back to. Let's do this together. Let's keep you at as safe a dose as we can maintain so you don't withdraw, in addition to keeping the baby safe. And there is absolutely a newfound partnership in this because originally we didn't think real highly of them. They didn't think very highly of us. Why are you doing this? You're keeping the moms addicted. And we've both learned, I think, quite a lot from each other. And it's part of genuinely one of the best aspects of doing this is the forging of all the new partnerships across town.
I'm wondering, though, you mentioned earlier that a lot of mothers who might be addicted have some trouble in admitting that. And I'm wondering if that is something that you have to work with an awareness campaign to get people to be completely open about or some sort of a screening to find out who is using these drugs, how much are using, et cetera.
You bet. And that's where the partnership with Diane and the community mental health has been huge. As we've also started to pilot screening programs around town, especially for the teenagers, but trying to catch as many women as possible in a couple different sites, just trying to deal with exactly that, screening people who are at risk, and then, because no one wants to admit this, and then instead of it being punitive screening, which once upon a time it was, just having people say, we're going to test your urine, and people going, no. This is not about punishing people. This is about how do we help you? Because very often, sure, the partners don't know. Mom's keeping this to herself. This is not something she wants to tell everybody. She just wants to handle it, that she's working. She doesn't want an employer to know. I mean, the ripple effect is pretty big very quickly.
Just to add to the screening idea, so our project, the Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Prevention and Treatment Project, has been funded through a grant from the Learning Network of Greater Kalamazoo. They're focused on cradle to career and making sure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow and reach their potential. So we're starting at that very early end of things with infants and trying to give them the best start to life. So one of the ways that we can do that, hopefully, is through prevention or early intervention. And we have had the opportunity to pilot a screening tool developed by Dr. Ira Chasnoff out of the Chicago area. It's called the 4Ps Plus. And we've started it in the Family Health Center as well as Catholic Charities. They're kind of our pilot sites. And then we're looking at hopefully expanding that throughout other OBGYN offices, as well as home visiting programs, so that we can just either get families to the right services that will assist them, or make sure that their healthcare provider can provide them the best care in order to have a healthy delivery and a healthy start to life. And so that's been a fantastic addition for our community, and it screens for substance use, alcohol, tobacco, depression, and domestic violence.
And how do you go about actually screening? Is somebody giving a blood sample or that sort of thing?
So it's an interactive conversation, and the science behind the tool is actually around the way the questions are asked. So they have to be very specifically asked the way that they were developed in order to get the high rate of reliability. And they're usually done at a woman's first appointment with her OBGYN office when she's pregnant, either by a nurse or a social worker, whoever's just doing their intake paperwork. And it takes less than a minute to have that conversation. If they score positive in any area, there is a brief intervention that takes another couple minutes. And I think that the rate of stopping whatever it is outside of opiates is about 40% once a woman just knows the effects that something can have on their baby.
You know, you mentioned there the OBGYN, but of course, there's a couple different doctors who are going to eventually be involved here. And I'm wondering if there's a greater effort to connect them, say, you know, a pediatrician, the first time that baby comes in, does that doctor also have to have some knowledge of what's going on here?
So part of what we have been working on through this initiative is to really make those connections stronger and more clear so that the information that can provide the best care is with all of the people who serve the family. So we do have a physician committee that has met monthly over the course of this grant initiative and will continue to meet regularly through the future to discuss what some of the barriers are, what type of information is helpful. We've developed a checklist for pediatricians so that if they have a baby come to them that has had neonatal abstinence syndrome, they have a better idea of what questions to ask, what services to make sure are in place, what different follow-up needs to happen with that infant versus a typical infant. So we have worked really hard on coordinating that network of services better and the communication paths.
Now, of course, the best outcome would be that everyone becomes more aware of the problem. So, you know, pregnant women aren't taking painkillers, et cetera. But as you've noted, Dr. Perucci, we already have a lot of babies there who are in the NICU. And I'm wondering if the approach there has had to change because of these babies, what they're doing, you know, neonatal NAS, as we call it. Is the approach in the NICU having to change for these particular babies?
We've had to change quite a bit, actually. The first thing was, you kind of talked a little bit about that kind of cultural overhaul, where we had to stop being angry at the moms for, you know, continue. And then we were angry for them not showing up in the unit for us to be angry at. So that really had to stop. It's still difficult. This is a population that's, like I say, very guilty and embarrassed about what they've done. So trying to invite them into the unit to help be the solution for their baby is an ongoing challenge and something we're still working at. That said, there's been some other real success stories as part of this. We've changed what we're doing for the babies to get them kind of detoxed, if you will, and get them off all meds, so they're not going home on any opiate. We kind of wean them off that while they're still with us in the NICU. We've changed also how we identify them, the nursing staff. There is something called a Finnegan scoring system. We weren't very good. What we found is we weren't very good at even identifying these kids. They were just thought, oh, maybe that baby's a little cranky. Not so much. So the nursing staff has really stepped up with just a huge number of them really becoming skilled at how to score the babies in when they're in the withdrawal period, and become more consistent. So trying to decrease, you know, one nurse says it's this way, one nurse says it's another, trying to all look at the same thing in the same way. So those kind of things have already gone on in the unit. We're actually working with the CPS and the child, all the court system in general, trying to say, look, if this mom is getting here to the unit, doing all the right things for their baby, please, just because they've had a positive urine screen, don't yank the baby away automatically. So once again, the ripple effects here of lots of different people we're working with throughout the community. And then follow-up of these little guys. Once again, we're at the beginning of the research. Some people have even publicly said, oh, once the babies get through the withdrawal, they're fine. I don't think that's quite true. And I think if you ask a lot of kindergarten teachers, you would say that's probably not true. These kids don't react the same way to their outer environment. They can't regulate themselves, which what we're hoping is by working with occupational therapy, physical therapy, outpatient, when they're babies, that hopefully we can help correct some of that rewiring of their brain. Like I say, this is new, and we're just in the midst of creating the study in a partnership with Western Michigan and Michelle Suarez and that whole group. We're just getting that off the ground, and then we'll kind of see, because that would be national news to say, look, here's the problem. Here's what we can do for it. If we can actually help those babies' brains develop better so that they can be more functional later on, that's what we're hoping for.
Let me back up to the woman who is pregnant.
Yep.
If they are just perhaps finding out for the first time that they are pregnant and perhaps are going to see their doctor, you know, what are some things that they should think about that maybe they need to ask, and perhaps things that they wouldn't normally think are a reason to be concerned? But what are some things that maybe now a pregnant woman should be asking her doctor about?
I think you need to make sure your doctor knows about every single medication you're on. What often happens is our medical care is fragmented. We go to a lot of different doctors. I go to a chiropractor. I go, you know, and I love herbal medicine and Oriental and some of the Eastern medicine, but everyone doesn't know what everyone else is prescribing or doing. We're trying to improve that with a national database where your doctor can look it up, but the office is so busy that I worry that sometimes they don't get to it. If you don't tell your physician everything you're doing, they can't know it. And like I say, those are hard things to do, but if you're worried about your health and the baby's, talk about everything you're doing. And it includes stuff that isn't automatically thought about. Are you having a glass of wine a week? Do you smoke? Can you cut down? Once again, this isn't about laying on guilt. This is about how do we help you for the mom's sake as well as the baby.
Where do you see this going next? I mean, what are some of the next steps in terms of creating more public awareness and in terms of trying to address the issue of children who get kind of a rough start in life because of a neonatal abstinence syndrome?
Well, so our formal funding ends at the end of June. And so we've been doing the big public awareness campaign over the last couple of weeks. And what happens kind of after that is that we informally continued to work on this. So the physicians have said that they want to continue to come together on a regular basis to talk about barriers or to talk about changes, anything that might help them continue to serve these families to the best of their ability. And the same thing has happened kind of on the social work home visiting side of things, where they want to continue to meet and talk about what's working, what's not working, and how can we make things better. At the same time, we want to not just think about the babies who are born with neonatal abstinence syndrome, but any babies who are exposed to substances prenatally, whether it's alcohol, tobacco, and a variety of other things, because the effects, although physiologically may be different, we know it's affecting the babies and the family units, and we want to do whatever we can to support them.
Part of the project also includes the school systems, where we've got now a way to, we're talking with them and following up. If we get a program that's helping some of these kids with physical therapy, getting that information to the teachers. So they are part of this partnership of, as these kids enter our school system, how do we help them and not lose them through the cracks, so that they get other diagnoses if they've gone to more than one foster family, if they've been removed, and get the wrong thing. That I think is a huge part of this, is making sure we're treating the right disease process.
Diane, you mentioned funding. Is this program in any danger of not being able to continue?
No. So we were very careful from the beginning of the project to not develop a program, not have something where we're adding staff to do a particular thing. What we've really focused on is systems transformation to better improve processes and procedures among the programs that already exist, just to better care for the families. So it wasn't dependent on having money to fund a thing or a person. So we can continue to do barrier busting and problem solving and make processes work better without funding.
Thank you both for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Diane Schaefer is Program Manager of Services for Youth and Families at Kalamazoo Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services. Dr. Robin Perucci is a neonatologist at Bronson Methodist Hospital. Links with more information about neonatal abstinence syndrome can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.